Financial planning for a scenario in which you become disabled. Could you pay your bills if something happened and you couldn't work? Do you have disability insurance so you could supplement any Social Security payments? If not, do you have enough savings to cover 3 months without work? It may seem like a scenario that will never happen, but according to the Council for Disability Awareness, more than 1 in 4 adults will experience a disability lasting 90 days or longer before they retire. 1 in 4. Injuries, of course, can cause someone to lose work time, but so can cancer, diabetes, heart attacks, and many other more common illnesses. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we will discuss disability insurance and how it works, and we'll learn specifics about Maine's disability insurance system. What are your questions? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. No one plans to get injured or have health problems, but it happens. So what options do you have to stay financially afloat in the face of disability? We will learn how both employees and employers plan for these situations. In the studio with me, Carol Harnett. She's president of the Council for Disability Awareness. Kathy Liston is vice president of group and voluntary claims at Sun Life Financial. And David Burke is a senior claims representative at Mass Mutual Financial Group. And he has a personal experience involving disability insurance. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about the different types of disability insurance? Do you wonder if you really need it? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm wondering, and Kathy, I'll put you on the spot first. If you could explain to me, there's so many things, you know, people know about workers' comp, we know Social Security, and now we're hearing about short-term disability, long-term disability. Can you give us a primer? What's the difference between all of these, and why do we need all four?
Sure. Well, disability insurance pays, essentially protects your income while you're unable to work. Short-term disability would pay your income for the first 13 to 26 weeks while you're out. After that, long-term disability would kick in and pay, depending on the policy, up to 2 years or longer, whereas Social Security disability benefits typically are for more severe conditions and don't pay out until several months after you've been out on claim, and oftentimes longer given the long decision times. So short-term and long-term disability is an important part, covering disabilities that are not caused in a work-related setting.
And then workers' comp is only if you're injured on the job.
Correct.
But
correct.
If you're injured off the job or have an illness that makes you unable to work, that's not going to be a workers' comp claim.
Correct. And that's where the private disability insurance becomes so important, because most of the illnesses and sicknesses are not work-related, and people need that financial safety net to ensure that they're able to pay the bills while they can't work.
Carol, I was shocked by the statistic that, according to the Social Security Administration, 1 in 4 people will be disabled at some point and for at least 90 days. What kind of things cause a disability that affects a job? It's not just becoming paralyzed or something catastrophic like that, is it?
You know, that's such a great thing to point out. What we know is, if we look at the full spectrum from short through long-term disability, I always say that disability starts with happy times. It's about having a baby. Now, that might not lead you to Social Security disability, but it certainly covers both short and or longer term absences, as Kathy described. But it's also about inconvenient times, people tearing a ligament in their knee or spraining their back and they need to be out a period of time. It can be about more challenging times, about a cancer diagnosis or about having a heart attack. And then, very rarely, it's about really scary times, about having a spinal cord injury or a brain injury that includes having a stroke. So it really runs a broad spectrum.
All right. And Dave, I understand not only do you work in the business, but your family has had a disability claim. Do you mind sharing your story?
Sure. And also, I did actually work as a senior claims agent for MassMutual for 11 years. And for the last three, I've actually been an internal wholesaler talking about disability insurance to MassMutual agents. So my story is, me and my wife both work at MassMutual. And 2 years ago, she got disabled due to stage 4 metastatic thyroid cancer. And as a result of it, it was a real life-changing event. And when I realized that she was disabled, I was kind of like, boy, how am I going to be able to take care of her? She's the higher wage earner in the family, and we depend on her income, and this could be a long process. And one of the great things is because I had worked in claims for so long, when Lisa first came to MassMutual, the first thing I had her do was get a supplemental disability policy from MassMutual that would work on top of her group disability coverage from the company to fill in some of the gaps. And as a result of having that coverage in place, all that Lisa had to do when she was disabled was focus on getting better. The bills got paid. And if people were disabled, when they have the financial stress on top of them, sometimes that can hinder their recovery. And it's important to have this because, you know, you don't know when this event's going to happen. And when it does happen, you may no longer be insurable to get disability. So it's such an important part of people's financial planning.
So, you know, we're not just having that. You talk about supplemental disability insurance. Yeah. A lot of people listening to this may say, well, this program doesn't really apply to me because my job offers disability insurance. Aren't I lucky? But you say even if your job offers it and provides it, it's worth looking into.
Definitely. It gives a baseline of coverage to start, but there's a lot of things it doesn't cover for the long term. A lot of group disability provided by your employer is inexpensive because it has some limitations to it. It may only cover your base salary, a portion of your base salary. A lot of people depend on their bonus income as well. And also, it doesn't protect things like your retirement contributions. A supplemental policy can make sure we're protecting that bonus income and also your retirement protection as well, because people don't think about, I'll use myself as an example, if I'm 48 years old and if I get disabled tomorrow, after 6 months, I can't contribute to my 401k at work or get any matches. So if I never go back to work and I get to 65 and my disability benefits drop off, I'm going to be in a pretty bad spot because all I'm going to have is Social Security retirement and how my 401k performed for 18 years with no contributions to it. So there's a lot of ways we can make sure that you're comprehensively covered, protecting your income, because most people don't realize your most important asset is your ability to earn income. It's not your BMW. It's not your jet boat. You know, it's your ability to earn income, and you're going to work a lot of years in your life. And that's why this coverage can make sure for a small percentage of your income can protect you and family. So not only do you give paycheck insurance, but you give lifestyle insurance. Because disability coverage deals with problems when you're alive. Life insurance takes care of problems when you're dead. And we want to make sure that you can maintain the promises and commitments to your family that you as a parent needs to do.
All right. So, Kathy, people are listening and say, okay, I'm sold. I need disability insurance. But, boy, what's it going to cost me?
Yeah, the overall cost, depending on the plan that your employer offers, which is the most cost-effective way to access the disability market, could cost as little as $200 a year. If you go into the supplemental and the private disability insurance, it's much more. But I think you have to look at what you would receive and that likelihood of becoming disabled. You have 3 times greater chance of becoming disabled than you do of dying, particularly in your early years. And yet almost everybody automatically buys life insurance because that's something they can understand and relate to. But if you're fortunate enough to have your employer offer group disability coverage and you have that opportunity to enroll during your annual enrollment, it really is pennies on the dollar, particularly when you compare it to the cost of health care insurance or other insurances. And it will pay, potentially, again, depending on the plan, 50 to 60% of your income while you're unable to work. And that can make the difference between that financial security while you're unable to work and not being able to pay your bills.
You say as little as $200 a year if you're able to do this through your employer. In Maine, we have a huge number of people who are either self-employed or work for a very small business with 2 or 3 people. I'm guessing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that kind of person is going to be looking at the private market. What's the cost range in that?
Significantly more. It will depend on their age and their gender and their overall health. Obviously, the younger you are, like life insurance, the younger you are, if you buy it when you're young and healthy, you're going to pay much less than if you wait. And I think you can control the cost of it to some degree based on the plan designs that you select. So if you select a basic coverage, you're going to pay far less than if you're selecting a Cadillac coverage, for example, that pays you to your age 65 and pays your full salary.
All right, Carol, what do we know about how many people have either disability insurance or enough savings to cover the costs of an injury or illness?
It's a great question. We know about 51 million Americans do not have private disability insurance. So that's about 1 in 3 people do not have some form of coverage, which is fairly scary because we also know from the Federal Reserve every year for the last 4 years, they've asked Americans a question. And they've asked us, if you had a $400 emergency expense today, could you pay for it? And a little less than half of people indicate that they do not have $400 on hand. And so they would either have to sell something or borrow the money. So we it's a good example of how little savings we have available to us as a nation. And so disability coverage becomes incredibly important in those situations where you're going to be out of work. It could be from anywhere from a couple of weeks to your age 67 or the year when you become eligible for Social Security disability insurance. It can be a long time.
Do we have a sense of how many employers, both nationally and here in Maine, offer some kind of disability insurance, whether the employer provides it or offers an opportunity for employees to buy it?
We don't have statistics on Maine, but we do have statistics nationally. And we know that about 40% of employers will offer short-term disability insurance, and about a third of employers will offer long-term disability insurance. Now, that data is actually related specifically to employers who are paying all of the premium or a portion of the premium. We are seeing a trend where employers are allowing disability insurance to be sold through the workplace, but they do not make a contribution.
And this is what, Kathy, you're talking about, that that's often a much better deal for the employee than trying to do it on the private market, buy it on the private market.
Exactly. Just like health insurance, if you try to buy it individually, is far more expensive than if you're able to buy it through a group plan. And most employers will make the decision to subsidize a portion or all of the group disability coverage, or allow, through the group environment, employees to enroll but pay the premiums themselves. So it really, the employer can help influence some of the costs in terms of what they're able to bear or pass all those costs on but still provide the benefits of a group policy.
Are there any kind of incentives for employers to offer, any kind of tax incentives or other kinds of incentives for employers to offer disability insurance to their employees?
Yes. And in fact, Maine just recently is leading the country in implementing a new auto enrollment feature, which allows employers to automatically enroll their employees into disability. And the employees have the opportunity to opt out just like they would a retirement plan. But part of that legislation included some tax incentives for employers, recognizing that if people have access to disability insurance and have a disability need to use that insurance, if they have that coverage, they're less likely to go on to the public welfare rolls because they've got some income protection during that time they're not able to work.
And I understand Maine's legislation is first in the nation of this kind.
First in the nation. And there's a few other states who are looking at similar legislation. And I think as more states adopt it and employers continue to find ways, particularly in an environment of such low unemployment, they're trying to
attract a broader field of employees, correct?
Yeah. And having competitive benefits programs becomes an important part of that, and disability is one of several components of a benefit program.
We're talking about disability insurance and thinking about what you might do if you were not able to work for a number of months or years because of an illness or disability. If you have questions, give us a call. Our number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. David, have there been trends within this industry? Are there changes in, say, the number of, not only the number of employers offering disability insurance, but the kinds of coverage they're offering?
Yeah, I mean, because you definitely do a different marketplace. One of the main areas that I focus at MassMutual is more in the, we call it the white collar, white coat market, or the professional market and stuff. And a lot of those people are have good salaries and things like that, and they're young people. We're looking for young, healthy people to build disability coverage with, and it's coverage that will grow with them as they go build through their career and their working years. It offers them opportunities to increase their coverage as they make more money and things like that. So there's a lot of opportunities for them. We deal a lot of times, too, in the markets with people starting professionals coming out of medical residency and things like that. But disability insurance as a whole, though, is certain carriers handle certain blue-collar areas and others are kind of in the white-collar, white-coat market like MassMutual. So there's definitely disability insurance out there to fit each person's needs.
I guess what I'm asking, are there trends? Are companies offering benefits that are as rich as they may have been offering 10, 20 years ago?
I would probably say not as – no, they haven't been as rich. A lot of times when companies want to cut costs, that's somewhere where they'll start as their group plan, as they can make reductions to that. But some are trying – and when in a competitive market where the unemployment rate is really low and they want to retain people, some people are trying to offer a better benefit package now. So I do see a trend of that as well.
I think a lot of where we picked up this change was when medical became a much larger contribution from the employee. And at first, we saw that isolated to medical coverage. And now we have seen it over time drift to other types of benefits that are offered through the workplace. You may have a structure that we would call a cafeteria plan. So every year in the fall, you go through and you select your benefits, and you're paying a portion of each of those benefits. We are seeing something interesting, however, that's happening in this very tight employment market. I just met an employer last week who went from a benefit design where the employer paid 40% coverage for your salary, and you had an option. You'll hear a language that says a buy-up, and the employee could pay a premium to increase that coverage to as high as 85% of their salary. And at first, that was really good, and the executives in the company tended toward that 85%. And what the HR leader understood was her lowest paid workers couldn't. They couldn't afford to do it. So they've just done something very novel. They have moved to an employer paying all the premium on a 65% plan. So that means everybody that works there has 65% of their salary protected. I think what's important to also for people who are listening, who are thinking about this, to keep in mind is when your employer pays the premium and you may need to leave the workplace and tap into that benefit, because the employer paid the premium, it is a taxable benefit. So in other words, the income you receive are subject to taxes. Individual disability insurance or insurance that you are paying the premium for, when you do tap into those benefits, that is not a taxable benefit. So it becomes worth even more money to you.
Can you pay into that? Can you buy disability insurance pre-tax, like you kind of 401k or an IRA or something like that?
Excellent question. It's up to how your employer sets up what's called the plan design. But yes, absolutely. There is sometimes an option to pay either pre or post. And our recommendation, whether you're a carrier or anybody who's worked in the industry or whether you're from the Council for Disability Awareness, we would always tell people try to pay on a post-tax basis. And that way the benefit is not taxable to you when you collect it.
All right. Interesting conversation talking about disability insurance. Again, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to the public. And Douglas Ridge, a new community in Brunswick committed to net zero home design with a variety of styles. Open house June 3rd. DouglasRidge.com.
President Trump says a deal denuclearizing North Korea would be good for everyone, including Kim Jong-un.
This would be with Kim Jong-un something where he'd be there, he'd be in his country, he'd be running his country. His country would be very rich. His people are tremendously industrious.
This week, Trump meets with South Korea to talk about the North. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is part of a national quest by PBS to find America's most beloved book, and we need your help. The Great American Read will spark a national conversation about reading and the books that have inspired, moved, and shaped us, and is counting on hearing from you and others around the country. Maine Public will also determine which book is Maine's favorite. You'll hear more about The Great American Read all summer and into the fall, but it all kicks off on Maine Public Television on Tuesday evening, that's tomorrow night, at 8 o'clock. For more information about The Great American Read, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events. Also, please note the Ellsworth Public Library will have an exclusive series premiere screening of The Great American Read tonight at 7 at the Grand Auditorium in Ellsworth. Doors will open at 6. Admission is free and open to the public. Contact the Ellsworth Public Library for more information.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, How to Prepare for Disability. Joining me, Kathy Liston, who's Vice President of Group and Voluntary Claims at Sun Life. David Burke is with MassMutual. What's your new title, David?
Disability Internal Wholesaler.
Okay. And Carol Harnett is also here. She's with the president of, she is the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to the call, so I want to ask you all, what is the system here in Maine? If I am suffer from something that causes me to lose time at work, do I just have my doctor submit a note to my insurance company, or is there more to it than that?
I would encourage people to reach out to their employer to get instructions for how to file a claim if they have that group disability insurance. They'll also need to have a conversation with their attending physician to understand how long they expect to be disabled because, for example, Social Security requires that your disability lasts for more than 12 months. Private disability insurers have different waiting periods. So if you only expect to be out a few weeks, you're probably not going to need to make that application for a long-term disability plan or for Social Security. And then you want to set expectations with your employer as to when you expect you'll be able to return to work, because obviously they're anxious to have you back filling your role, and they can help you understand that process. But it does start with that conversation with your physician to really understand what the prognosis is and how likely you'll be out for an extended period of time.
All right, we're going to go. Let's see. We'll go to email here from April. Can you have your guests talk about how women can use short-term disability to cover maternity leave, please? You know, it's interesting. My kids are older now, but I remember being frustrated that I was out on short-term disability and I was willing to go back part-time. And I was told, you can't. You're either out or you're not.
Yeah, I think short-term disability is a great opportunity to protect a maternity leave and certainly be paid for that period of time. A lot of policies now have what's called a partial disability provision that would give you that opportunity, assuming there's medical reasons to prevent you from working full time, to allow you to transition back into the workforce. Some states, Maine isn't one of them yet, but also offer paid family leaves, and that provides additional opportunity to be able to stay out and enjoy the hopefully happy event of having a baby and have your job protected while you're out on leave.
So that option of a partial disability is fairly recent.
It's common in disability contracts, but it only applies if you're unable to work full time. So if you're making a personal choice to work part time, your short-term disability benefits may not pay you during that transition time.
Okay. And is that really commonly used for maternity leave? Because someone would say, I don't have a disability. This is a perfectly natural part of life.
It's one of the leading causes of short-term disability claims is maternity leaves. And someone may have just a very routine maternity leave, or they may have complications before or after their delivery. And that's where the benefit becomes even more important. To provide them some financial support while they're getting healthy to be able to return back to work.
And April wants you all to ask about how women can use short-term disability if you have what are most common policies. Will you be able to use short-term disability to cover? Yes, Carol, you're nodding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what people don't understand, too, is you can go out before your due date. So for even people in white-collar or white-coat jobs, we'll often see people go out about 2 weeks before their due date, and then most of them receive benefits for 6 to potentially 8 weeks afterward. Sometimes you'll see an 8-week benefit if someone's had a cesarean section. They'll be out longer. But we are also seeing disability, what we would call complications of pregnancy, appearing in long-term disability. And that can often be related to women who are working in jobs that may have physical requirements. that their physician determines they're not able to work. So they will go out sooner than normal, the sooner than the 2 weeks that we typically see. And that will lead them into a duration where they're out of work in total a little bit over 3 months. Very rarely do we see them go longer than that, but it's very helpful if you are in a more physical job.
We'll go to Linda, who's calling from Gardner. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. So quite a while ago now, I started having health issues and went to the doctor and got all sorts of testing. And he finally ended up diagnosing me with fibromyalgia, which I understand is one of those good day, bad day type of illnesses, and there's no test that points to it and says, yes, this came out positive, so this is what you have. And I was granted a long-term disability, but then they had someone review the note and everything and said, okay, well, you're denied, you're done, you can't collect anymore. And so since then, that was last August, and since then I have been in, I've been appealing that decision. And so I've been to my doctor. My doctor has written letters after letters and sent in his case file. And my doctor and I have determined that it seems to be about 25 hours a week. So maybe 5 or 6 hours a day is basically my maximum, and they've proved that time and time again, because when I try to work more, I end up, you know, for 4 or 5, 6 days just being just exhausted, and the hurting comes on and all of that. So my life has become this extreme balancing act of, you know, medication and activity, but not too much activity, and you know, not too little activity and work, but not too much work. And I'm still, and of course, like you mentioned earlier, that the added stress of the financial burden.
Yeah. Linda, do you have questions for our panel?
Yeah. So any advice, any helpful hints, I mean, what can I do? Because, you know, I mean, I've given my paychecks and shown my sick time and all of this stuff. Anything I can do, any suggestions, any help?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to jump in here. I'm sorry to hear that you're having the health issues that you are. Fibromyalgia is someone who's worked in claims for a long time. It's obviously a very complicated condition, because it can't always be just objectively diagnosed by x-rays and test results. My best advice when you're having a challenge with a claim is that you need to be very proactive and get your doctors involved to deal directly with the insurance company, write letters on your behalf. And get as much information to them as well. Because one thing I've, in my experience working at MassMutual as a claims examiner for 11 years, is that most cases, companies, we look at cases on a case-by-case basis, because there's no cookie-cutter approach to claims. Everybody's scenario is different. So my advice is provide the most additional information, everything that you can. And if it does come to a point that you don't seem like you're getting, you've gone through the appeal process, then you might want to seek legal counsel from someone who specializes in disability insurance claims.
The other thing that I would add to it is, and I don't know the terms of your policy, so design can affect this, but long-term disability or even a private disability policy will allow you, just as in the short term, to work a intermittent amount of time or a part-time amount of time up to you about 80%. If you're able to work 80% of the time, you're often allowed up to 80%. You're often allowed a small benefit to make up the difference from when you can't work. But what's very important is these policies are based on how your health condition impacts your ability to perform the functions of your job. So when you and your doctor are communicating, you should frame your limitations or your capabilities, depending on which way you want to say it, specifically to the demands of your job. And if you frame it that way, it becomes easier for the carrier to understand how you're being impacted.
Linda, good luck to you. If you is there a scenario, and how does coverage usually affect, where you may, and you're talking about your job, your disability impacts your ability to do the job that you have done so far, but you're able to do another job? Something just popped in my head. You've been a plumber and you have an injury where you can't be a plumber anymore, but maybe you can work in the office, but that office job pays less. than you were making as a plumber.
So that's where partial disability comes in a lot of claims, is that we kind of measure the loss of income, that we look at what you were doing prior to disability and your income prior to that and what you're doing now. You may be working less as a result of the sickness or injury and earning less. So we look for, we measure the loss of income by comparing pre-disability income to your current income, and that usually results in a percentage of the benefit you may be entitled to supplement on top of the income you're already earning.
And oftentimes, if someone has group insurance or private insurance and they're not able to return to their former employment, and perhaps they don't have skills or experience to go into a new profession, the insurance company will help provide, through vocational rehabilitation support, retraining, job search skills, and other resume writing techniques and other supports to help transition into another occupation, knowing that you may not be able to return to your initial occupation.
And that's often part of the policy.
Absolutely. And it's at no additional cost to the employee. And that can be beneficial to the employee who's anxious to get back to work but needs assistance in how to do that, but also to the employer in terms of helping that employee return to work, either with them or anyone else.
Many policies will also include an accommodation benefit. So let's say, for example, in your job, you hurt your back and you can't do your job anymore using the chair you have. The policy will actually pay to have an ergonomic chair that helps you sit for longer periods of time. And so that's, particularly for the employer, that's a benefit because they don't have to pay that expense. It actually comes out of the policy.
All right. We'll go to Ava calling from York. Hi, Ava. Go ahead.
Well, hello. I had one initial question, but before I ask it, I'm going to segue to your last commentary because my actual profession as a business owner for over 30 years includes resume writing, being a career coach, and I have been approached at times for what you did term the vocational aspect and that the policy might take care of that. Can you just comment on, I guess, how likely that would be in your, you know, menu of benefits overall for either partial or full disability that someone would be able to obtain if, like you mentioned, a case where someone can no longer do what their job has been over many years and they need to transition and change careers. That's the first thing. But I was calling to ask your opinion on what type of policy would be optimum as opposed to an employee, but myself as an owner, for my own disabilities, of which I've never had any, but I always look at what other people gain for benefits. There's not a lot out there for an actual owner to secure. So that would be my question. Small business, of course, not corporate.
Ava, how many employees?
Well, I have two employees, but what I'm asking is for myself as the owner, which type of policy do you think would be best for me and for my partner in the business to secure for ourselves? It's a little more difficult.
Sure. I think one of the scenarios you could do is you could look at, for you and your partner, you could look at getting individual disability coverage, which you'd own. It could be, like I said, it's going to cover your income, your bonus income. And like I said, it may be based on your business entity, might be a deductible business expense. If you get, you like I said, you could be potentially fully underwritten for that, or there might be some type of guaranteed, what we call standard issue, based on size of employers, that some companies will offer guaranteed coverage based on the size of your company. But I think you're looking at maybe individual coverage and maybe a potential multi-life discount because you've got yourself, your partner, and another employee. There might be an opportunity to get some individual coverage you guys can keep with you. And just in case down the road, if you decide to go a different route, you always have this disability coverage with you, which is most important.
And I think the first half of that question was around how common is it that insurance companies will provide vocational services to employees. And I would say in my experience, all of the leading group insurers have full-time staff of vocational rehabilitation specialists. They're typically master's degreed certified specialists, and they are more than willing to help assist in most cases. Sometimes, as mentioned earlier, the policy will provide additional supplemental benefits for hard costs, such as retraining or equipment, but those that vocational counseling are typically part of what has been purchased as part of the group plan.
All right. You'll also see that in the individual plans as well.
Ava, thank you so much for your call. We are going to have to take a quick break, but before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to learn about the changing North Woods, what the forest economy means to Maine, and the relationship between humans and forests. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. If you'd like to join today's conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about disability insurance. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Livingston Hughes Surveyors, full-service land surveying for homeowners, title companies, and mortgage lenders throughout Maine. LivingstonHughes.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Michael Chabon has a new collection of essays called Pops, Fatherhood in Pieces. It features a story about taking his 13-year-old son to Paris Fashion Week, which became a viral sensation online, and meditations on the complicated relationships between fathers and children. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have World Affairs. The guest speaker is Robert Malley, president and CEO of the International Crisis Group and one of the U.S. negotiators who helped forge the Iran nuclear deal in 2015. He'll offer his insight into what President Trump's withdrawal from the deal means for U.S. Middle East relations. That's World Affairs coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Understanding Disability Insurance. Joining me today, David Burke, who's with Mass Mutual, Carol Harnett from the Council for Disability Awareness, and Kathy Liston with Sun Life Financial. We'd love you to join the conversation. Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Susan writes, I am a partner in a small business, which is an S Corp. We do draw a small hourly wage, but the bulk of our compensation is through profit distribution. Can disability insurance cover that income as well as the W-2 wages? Thank you.
Yeah, and the answer is yes to that, because business owners, usually their income can come in two forms. They may pay themselves a W-2 salary to survive, you know, week to week to pay their bills. But obviously, as business owners, the net income of the business is the bulk of where their income is comes from. And yes, that definitely can be insured through disability insurance.
All right. We have a long email from someone who asked to have her name withheld. But the summary of it is that she had a situation where she was disabled, a condition that was undiagnosed. Her company, she says, stayed within the law, but they were clearly unhappy about it. They insisted she attend weekly meetings to review her medical situation, and she felt like her job was always at risk. Her comment, a message to employers, employees who get sick and must leave work temporarily to deal with their health do not want to be going through what they're dealing with. Nobody asked to get sick. Threatening to terminate an employee makes things worse.
I think one of the challenges that employers have when their employees are out on disability, particularly smaller companies, there's no one there to do the work while that employee is absent. So they're very anxious both to have that person come back to work as quickly as possible, but also to understand how long they could expect them to be out to make decisions as to whether they need to authorize overtime, bring in temporary employees, or ultimately replace somebody. So whether through that formal means, which felt fairly intrusive, it's really important for people who are out on disability to maintain strong communications with their employer, to let them know they don't have to share personal details of their diagnosis or their medical situation, but just to let them know, I am planning to return to work. I'm hoping to be released or returned to work by this time. I'm very interested in coming back and retaining my job. So it enables that employer to plan accordingly in terms of how they're going to get that person's work done while they're out and not able to work.
We have an email from Isaac, and I'm going to read this carefully because I feel like he's a little inside baseball here. Two important things to note on STD/LTD policies, short-term disability, long-term disability policies. elimination period, and whether premium payments are pre-tax or post-tax. 6 weeks off for pregnancy with a 30-day EP only gives one about 2 weeks of pay. And if the employer pays the premium, that pay will be taxed, and likely only 60% of pre-disability earnings. Carol, you're nodding. You understand this?
I do. And he is definitely a little insider baseball going on. There's in every policy design, there's what's called an elimination period. Some people call it a waiting period. So what we typically see on STD is about a 7-day waiting period or an elimination period, although certainly there are plan designs that go to 30 days. And so what that means is from the time you leave work, you can't start collecting benefits until that period of time has passed. So he is correct. If you go out 2 weeks before you deliver a baby, the clock starts the day you go out and you don't collect your first check till 30 days have gone by. But again, we see many more plans designed in a 7-day waiting period. And the other thing that he's referring to is what we've already discussed, which is this taxability portion. So if your employer pays all the premium, when you do collect the benefit, it is taxable. If you are in an individual plan and you are paying the premium, then it is a non-taxable event. So even if it's an employer-offered benefit through a cafeteria plan, again, you get to pick and choose. If you have the ability to pay your premium on a post-tax basis, that financially is going to be a better choice for you if you do collect benefits.
All right, Isaac, thanks so much for your email. We'll go to Gay, who's calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Gay, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Good. Sorry I came into the show late, but I wanted to talk about long-term disability and how difficult it is to collect. I have been fighting and fighting and fighting and appealing. And I think it's written that the insurance company has the final say as to whether or not you collect it. You know, I've worked for many years and thought I had this safety net that if anything were to happen to me, that I would collect long-term disability. I have been awarded Social Security disability, but have been turned down for long-term disability.
How common is that? I'll ask my guest that you, one has been accepted.
Usually it's the other way around. Social Security disability a lot of times is tougher to achieve, actually, because their standards are very high, and the Social Security Administration is a very understaffed organization. So a lot of times when people file claims, it can be sometimes a year or two before a disability claim sometimes is made a decision on. And one of the things about the Social Security Administration is that being a government organization, if you file a claim with them and provide them with a list of, let's say you have 12 doctors involved in your care, and they order the records, and only one set of records comes in from a urologist, they're going to make a decision based on that because they don't have the resources to follow up. One of my best advices when dealing with disability claims is, obviously everything is on a case-by-case basis, but it's to get as much of the information that you can gather, get your doctors involved to be involved with the insurance company to help with them, making sure they have all the information to make the best decision on the case.
You know, I know that in Social Security cases, there are courts that people can appeal to. What about in private disability insurance? Where do you appeal to?
Well, you'd have to, you go through whatever appeal process the insurance companies have, but then you have the right to, if you need to get legal representation, to talk to someone about if you don't feel your case is, you know, being heard and need to get more additional help. I think that's worth considering, and it may be in this person's case.
All right, Gay, thank you for your call, and good luck to you. We just lost a caller who wanted to know what's being done to prevent the abuse of long-term disability and short-term disability. Carol, is that an issue in this field?
You know, you will always hear a certain amount of fraud taking place within any situation, including insurance. And what we know statistically is about 3% of people will outright misrepresent themselves, which is really a very small percentage of people aren't completely honest about their situation. And then we'll see about a hedge of about another 7%, so a total of 10%. Where in the 7% of people, they just really aren't aware of all of the terms of a policy. So, for example, if they're disabled from their primary occupation, but they, let's say, have a part-time job, they may legitimately forget to report those earnings, which they should be reporting to a disability carrier. And so that might be discovered by the claim examiner, or it might be discovered by what's called a fraud examiner or a fraud unit. And in those cases, it's just a matter of an adjustment. So yes, there's a small percentage of people who may represent, but by far majority of people are very honest when they are filing their claims.
And there's a lot of tools out there in, you know, in the claims industry to help kind of counter the fraudulent claims. I mean, you know, the internet is such a great tool. As myself working in claims for almost 20 years, I've handled many claims. And as the internet came into play, it's helped deal with a lot of those fraudulent claims with people posting things on Facebook and things like that. They're, you know, not afraid to say things that they probably shouldn't. And that's obviously helped us. The Technologies Act has helped counter fraudulent claims a lot better today.
We have an email from Cheryl. Cautionary tale. My son, who had a good job in Michigan, received a significant concussion in an accident on his way home from work. The policeman on the scene said he was fine, and the next day the urgent care professional said the same. However, over the following weeks, his reading ability dropped from a book per day to kindergarten level. His emotional level plummeted to PTSD depression. He knew he couldn't perform his job as he had, and not wanting to disappoint his bosses, resigned. He had no idea where to get advice on what to do, nor the mental capacity. So yes, planning ahead for disability is important, but not something young people think about.
That's very true, and that's why the Council for Disability Awareness in this month, which is Disability Insurance Awareness Month, we've done a targeted effort for people who are under the age of 40, and we're trying to be as disruptive as possible by using stories that are within their lives that people can relate to so they understand that disability isn't about someone who uses a wheelchair. It is about people having babies and tearing ligaments and getting cancer, and even to the point where he had what we would classify as a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury. That can happen to anybody at any time. And so that's really where our efforts have been in the last 6 weeks, is helping people understand that.
And one of the things for young people that, you know, today the most common phrase for dealing with how young people would maybe deal with a disability situation where they didn't have income is they'd set up a GoFundMe account. And there's so many GoFundMe accounts out there today, and they do serve a purpose. But, you know, if you were going to take care of all the people that are close to you that had needs for that, you'd probably have to have three jobs to support all of those going on. The disability insurance could actually be your own GoFundMe account to take care of your needs when you get disabled.
Christina writes in an email, how much does disability insurance cover mental health issues? Obviously, someone who has already been diagnosed with severe mental illness, such as schizophrenia or bipolar, is one question. But there are people who say fall into a major depression or early onset Alzheimer's, where work might be difficult, either temporarily, such as postpartum depression, or permanent, such as a progressive disease.
Disability plans will cover mental health conditions, just as they do any other conditions that prevent someone from working. The expectation, as with all diagnoses, is that someone's getting appropriately treated and working to improve their condition and manage it. Some policies, based on the terms that the employer selects, may limit mental health conditions to 2 years of benefits, with the belief that the people have 2 years to work with their providers and improve their health. But many policies provide equal and unlimited benefits for mental health conditions, just as they would for an orthopedic or a cardiac condition.
And in individual coverage, you can often get a policy does not have a limitation on mental health coverage.
I know that often, you know, when you have a typical health insurance claim, you'll be asked if you have other insurance. How does that work for a short-term or long-term disability claim? Because most of us have Social Security disability insurance. How do they overlap?
They do interconnect, and if you have private insurance, that would subtract anything you would receive under the Social Security disability plan. But keep in mind that Social Security, about 40% of people receive Social Security, or 40% are excluded from Social Security because of not having enough earnings or not meeting that stricter definition of disability. And that Social Security decision can take years to get through the hearing stage. I mean, there's been a lot of publicity around the long hearing waits for Social Security. So private insurance can pay during that period, pay your full benefit of 60% or two-thirds while waiting for your Social Security decision. If you ultimately get a favorable Social Security decision, some of that retroactive award will be due back to the insurance company. And if you're ultimately denied from Social Security but still meet the definitions of disability under your private plan, you've had that financial security during that time while Social Security was pending.
David, I want to ask you what people ought to be looking out for when they're choosing a policy. Are there certain policies that have, red flags or pitfalls, something you really don't want to have in your disability policy, whether term or long term?
Yeah, especially definitely want to know about the language of disability in the policies. A lot of the policies can, based on price, can have limited definitions of disability. Most disabilities are that you can't do the main duties of your occupation, you're not working another occupation, you're under the care of a doctor. But they may only look at your job duties in your own occupation for the first 2 years. And after 2 years, if you could work in any occupation based on your education and training, they may be able to, your claim may stop. So it's almost like buying a car. You got to look at all the features of it and find out what's the best fit. Don't totally be focused on cost. It's about the value and the company behind that that's bringing the product to you, because this is going to cover your most important asset, which is ability to earn income. And like I said, we all have a lot of years to live and take care of a lot of things. So that disability insurance can do that. And I think one of the most important things is that we talked about supplemental disability insurance. I think it's important because it's great that the employers provide coverage. That's great as a baseline. But a lot of times when the employer pays it and you leave that job, you don't have that coverage anymore. You may be uninsurable when you leave that company and go do something else. So it's always great to have supplemental disability insurance because it's always with you through your working years.
All right. Go ahead.
And you also want to choose a company who's financially strong and going to be there. If you don't need this coverage for 5 or 10 years out, you want to know they're going to be there and able to meet their liabilities and pay your claim.
Carol, before we go, I know you wanted to talk about a New York Times article that kind of came at this issue from a different angle.
It did. A group of economists a year ago were doing a study looking at the impact of having health insurance and not having health insurance and looking at hospitalization. They were somewhat surprised to find, in at least they did the study in the state of Oregon, that it was only a minor difference in people who are covered versus not covered. However, and the huge surprise for them was that people who are hospitalized, particularly after the age of 50, when they followed them over time, had about an $11,000 drop in income over a 3-year period. And 60% of those people never returned to work. The economists were so taken aback by this that they put out a national call that we need to readdress this idea of having disability insurance for all Americans.
Well, thank you all for being here. That was Carol Harnett, president of the Council for Disability Awareness, Kathy Liston with Sun Life Financials with me, as well as David Burke at Mass Mutual. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, all about Maine's North Woods and recent research. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.